Did you inherit $1 million from your grandparent, or are you about to become wealthy from someone else's hard work? If you say yes to these questions, this show is not for you. You, the hardworking, committed, and ambitious professional who have a 9-to-5 corporate job or a 12-hour shift worker keeping the assembly line running. Perhaps you run your gig as a freelancer, or maybe you run a small business. You are in the right place. Welcome to the Career Evangelist Podcast, where you get your weekly tips, ideas, strategies, and inspiration to find purpose in what you do so you can build a career you are passionate about and live a fulfilled life. Here is your host, Bola Alabi.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Career Evangelist Podcast. I'm excited today because we have a guest with us. We have John Miles. He's joining us today. And together with John, we are going to be talking about purpose-driven life. John is a multi-industry CEO, Navy veteran, and a Fortune 50 C-level executive. He's now a system entrepreneur. He is the host of Passion Struck podcast, and he uses Passion Struck to teach growth seekers the keys to living intentionally. So if you want to find out how to discover your purpose and live intentionally, you are going to want to stick with us today. Without keeping you guys waiting any further, I'm going to bring in my guest, John. Hey, John, how are you?
Hi, Paul. How are you today?
I'm good, and it's awesome to have you join us today. So, yeah, I did a little bit of intro. Do you mind telling my audience about you so that they can get to know you better?
I think for your audience, it's important for them to know that, like so many people, my life and my career journey has gone through significant reinvention over time. I ended up going to the Naval Academy. I was a naval officer for a number of years, then entered the world of Big Four consulting once I got out of the military, did that in management consulting for a number of years before pivoting into industry, where I made it to the C-level in Fortune 50 companies. And then I did the next phase of my career, both working as a partner in a private equity firm, and then I started my own company where I was doing fractional executive placements for many of the companies in private equity portfolios before launching this whole Passion Struck initiative that I'm doing now.
Okay, that's awesome. You know, when I saw that you were a level 50, Fortune 50 level executive, by all means, to many people, that's a success on its own. So I wonder, why did you leave such position to pursue and build Passion Struck? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting journey. So when I came out of the military, I had no intention of going into the civilian world. I came out to join the FBI, and I was literally a week from being in the military, taking a week of leave. It was Thursday or Friday of that week. I'm supposed to go to Quantico on Monday, and all of a sudden my detailer calls me and says, Congress can't get their act together. They haven't passed the budget. And so we have had to take the step of recycling your class. And I don't know if it's going to be 18 months from now or 3 years from now, but it's going to be a while. So I just found myself in a situation where I didn't have a plan B. I thought this was the for sure thing. And I immediately started doing the only thing I knew how to do, which was cold calling prior service academy graduates until I was lucky enough to find a job at Booz Allen. But so I started on this track that I never even thought I was going to get into. And I guess along the way, I started to have these aspirations of different titles or positions I wanted to attain. And At first, it started out with I wanted to be a chief information security officer. And then next thing was I wanted to understand how to do infrastructure and operations. And then I wanted to become the head of software development, and then the chief data officer, and then the CIO. And so I went after this high achieving career where I was tackling each one of those. And in most cases, as the youngest person who ever held that position, or in Lowe's, I was the youngest vice president. And I eventually got the CIO role when I was 39, in probably one of the top 10 CIO roles you could want. And I finally reached this destination. And I guess in the back of my mind for a number of years, I had been hearing this inner voice calling me with a completely different, I guess, outlook on what it was telling me to do. And I faced this conflict between achieving what I thought was the pinnacle of what my success was supposed to be, yet having this inner calling that I wasn't even on the path to doing what I was put on earth to do. And so in that moment, I just started to really do some self-awareness work and came to the realization that I, for so many years, had been chasing all these external characteristics, I think, of what we perceive success is: the recognition, the titles, the money, the house, the rewards, the accolades, when inside I truly felt empty because I wasn't truly fulfilling the purpose that I was meant to do on earth, which I feel like I'm now doing with Passion Struck. But I think many people feel this way. But when you have yourself in this position and you've got more money than you know what to do with, you've built this status for yourself, and then all of a sudden you're being told to do something 180 degrees different, it is so hard to want to follow that path because, yeah, let's face it, I mean, it's scary.
Yeah.
And then the self-doubt creeps in. You don't think you can do the pivot. Plus, I was trying to understand, like, how am I as a senior executive supposed to influence all these lives? Like, I've never done that before. I mean, what does this all mean? So all of that to say, I reached the pinnacle where, and I think you're hearing this more and more. I've heard it on a couple of the episodes on your show, where you think you're living out this great life by achieving these different things. And I guess I came through all this hours of dedication, working 100-hour weeks, putting everything else as a second priority, I finally came to the realization that I had been creating dreams for all these years for other people, but I wasn't focusing on making my own dreams and aspirations become real.
You know what? I like the way you shared it. And I think what you just shared resonates very well with me, because I also want to achieve so many things. But you also mentioned the inner voice, and I think that's something that is missing for so many of us. What is that inner voice, and how do we let it guide us to where, or a position, whether it's 9 to 5 or starting our own businesses, that position where we feel confident, fulfilled, that we are now fulfilling our purpose? What does that look like for you, John?
Yeah, I'm going to just tell you a little bit of a story, because I think regardless of how old we are and where we are at on our journey, there are different points where we can feel stuck in life. And I think the first thing to realize is that is okay. And to allow yourself to express that and don't hold it within, because that's what I did. I found myself stuck. And instead of going out and seeking help for it and talking to people about it, I sat there and let it ruminate to the point that it started to kind of burn up a hole in my soul. Now, the story I wanted to tell you about is I have a friend, Andreas Widmer. He runs the MBA program for the Catholic University. And when he was a teenager, 19, 20 years old, he was completely lost in life, had no idea what he wanted to do, was getting in and out of trouble. And he ended up applying to be a Swiss guard for the Pope and expecting never to get it. He lands this position working for Pope John Paul II. And he told me that the Pope, who, like many people who are CEOs of large businesses, you know, he doesn't have a lot of time, but he said what was really profound about him is that he made the time to make everyone who was around him feel like they were the most important person to him at that point. But he could tell that Andreas was listless and that he was not happy with where he was in life. And he told Andreas that the greatest quest that God gives to any one of us is to exploit the uniqueness that we have in the service of others. And it is going to be your life mission to discover that uniqueness and how to bring that to the world. Because when you do, you will be living with flourishment. You will be content. You will be happy. And so it's a long story of me kind of describing, I think we all hear these inner voices. And if you're spiritual, you may believe it comes from God. It could come from the universe. If you have no spirituality at all, it may just be this voice inside your head that you hear. And I think the struggle that we have is oftentimes we don't do enough soul searching to understand what our uniqueness truly is. And so we go down these paths of trying to become something we're not. And I liken it to, we live our lives as if we're in a masquerade ball, wearing this mask of inauthenticity that ends up showing up as a version of ourself that is not truly who we are to society. And yet we keep pursuing it. And so we become more inauthentic and inauthentic until it burns a hole in us because we're not doing what we were put on earth to do. And what I try to talk about in the book is being passion struck is really exploiting, it's finding and then exploiting this uniqueness, this differentiation that you have to solve a problem that you were put on earth to solve that only you have the inherent talents to do. And that's what that inner voice is really calling for you to do. And I think the more we push against it, like I was doing, I think this inner voice starts out as like a tap on your shoulder, welcome you to listen. And then it's like it cuts your knees out from under you. And so many of us still don't listen. Yeah. And then it's like a sledgehammer hitting you. And I went through all those stages because the voice kept getting louder and louder and I wasn't listening. And then it made it so I had to listen and take action. But you know, my hope would be that people listen to it earlier before they have to go through the pain
of it
getting louder, because that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, no, I like that. And thank you for explaining it that way. You spoke about uniqueness. We are all different, and yet we have that unique things about us. And you connected it with us finding ways to use our uniqueness to solve problems. But there's something that you mentioned that I would like us to, you know, do a little bit dive in. And that's the soul searching. You said we need to do some soul searching. And I do agree with you that most people, they don't do that soul searching. How do we search our soul to connect to what we should be doing? Maybe you have some one or two steps that you can share with us. I'll be curious to hear from you.
To me, the way that you do this soul searching is you try to recognize reoccurring patterns in your life. I mean, it's going through this journey of trying to understand your life's narratives and the themes that constantly appear again and again. To me, it's like this process that mirrors patterns that you experience that are guiding you towards your purpose. And I think it's those reoccurring themes that keep coming up where you're being kind of positioned to look for things that are exploiting your strengths and to double down on them. But I think a lot of us, let's face it, with all the distraction that's around us, we don't do that self-work. We don't really use mindfulness practices, yoga, other things where we allow ourselves to sit with ourselves, to do the reflections of what brings us joy, what brings us satisfaction, what makes us, you know, have a smile on our face the second we put our feet on the bed. Like, what are we grateful for? Because that's typically an indication of where you need to be doubling down and doing things that are going to bring you joy and satisfaction and contentment. So that's kind of the way I would explain it.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. I can see your book coming out, I think, next year, Passion Struck. Can you maybe give us the big idea about your book? Why are you writing this book? And why is now the right time to get out this world?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of great books out there, and I read a ton. I read over 100 a year because of the podcast. And I would say that the vast majority of them, they're very good reads, but I don't feel like once I get done reading them, I'm taking action on them. And the way I crafted my book is I didn't want it to be something that someone just read. I wanted it to be something that they lived. And so I wrote it to really help people understand, regardless if they're an individual who is just entering the workforce, whether that's an hourly job coming out of high school, or maybe they're in high school, or they've just coming out of college, like, what are a series of steps that you can take that will lead you to create a flourishing life? I wrote it for the high achiever who might have plateaued and they don't know how to reach the next level. I wrote it for the person who's stuck and maybe they need to reinvent themselves and need to understand the building blocks for getting there. So the whole point was to give the reader with something where there was an entry point with a quiz that they could do to understand where they sit in this whole passion struck continuum, and then explain what the steps are, but most importantly, give them a section about how do they apply it so that they're taking the actions in their life with examples, with exercises to go from one plateau to the next. And so that's what was really the purpose of the book was, let me phrase it this way, Bola. Cornell University did a research study in 2018 where they examined thousands of individuals who were nearing the ends of their lives. And they asked all of them, what was the biggest regret that they all had? 76% came back with the same answer, and that was that they didn't live the life that they aspired to lead when they were younger. And a number of things get in the way. I mean, life gets in the way, our health gets in the way, kids get in the way. We can make all kinds of excuses. But what I was trying to figure out is, how do I help people not be the 76% and to be the 24% that go to their grave feeling like they lived a limitless life, a life where they flourished, a life where they became self-realized? And that was the whole purpose behind why I created it.
Oh, that's so good. I also always encourage people to live like their life to the fullest. And I think that's the same thing that you are sharing here. Now, I know that you have a 12-step framework in this Passion Struck. Can you introduce us to maybe the first 2-3 framework so that we can at least have some understanding of what Passion Struck is all about?
Yeah, so let me give you the model behind the whole book. So I think a model helps people visualize what I was trying to create here. So if you think about this and you're visioning Mickey Mouse with his big ears, think about those two ears as circles. And one is mindset shifts, and the other is behavior shifts. So your mindset is really the why behind the things that you're doing in your life. And it kind of leads into some of the underpinnings for the how. Your behavior, which is this next year, which I call behavior shifts, is really the what. And then underneath it, imagine a third circle that kind of overlaps the others, which is deliberate action. And that's the when and the where for how you shift your mindset and how you shift your behavior. And so all of those three things kind of come together in the book. The first section of the book is on mindset shifts. The second is on behavior shifts. And the third, I call the psychology of progress, is really around how do you take deliberate action in your life. And then around all of this is what I would say is the fourth pillar. And that is all of this is ignited or fueled by intrinsic motivation. So I'll give you just an example of one of the mindset shifts and one of the behavior shifts. So why don't I just pick, I'll pick the sixth mindset shift is something that I call the action creator. And this is how do you take the steps towards meaningful and intentional change? And the way I write each one of these chapters is I kind of introduce the topic. I then go into an interview that I've done with an expert. They're either in behavior science, psychology, positive psychology, flow state, you name it. And I kind of go through the principle that I'm teaching. Then I go through how I've applied it in my own life. And then I try to show you through stories of individuals who have utilized this, how looking at a third party perspective, you could see how they utilized it. And in this chapter, I focused on astronaut Wendy Lawrence and Mark Cuban. But the whole thing that I'm trying to teach in this chapter is that action leads to action. And what so few of us understand is that intentionality plays a huge role in the actions that you're taking, because I liken it to that there are easy choices we make in life and harder choices. The easy choices are the ones where maybe we're in college and we've got a paper that's coming up that we know we need to work on that's going to be 60% of our grade. But instead of working on it, we know our friends are going to the bar. And so we go to the bar instead of doing the hard work that we know we need to do and procrastinate. And so many of us make these easy choices that aren't aligned necessarily to our aspirations. They're not aligned to our beliefs. They're not aligned to our core values. They're just the easy things in the moment that we think will bring us comfort. Whereas the intentional choices, they're the harder ones. They're a group of friends who might be bringing up a belief that you don't believe in, and instead of contradicting them, you let it go. You make the easy choice and choose to not stand up for your core beliefs, but to just go along with the crowd. And to me, being an action creator is taking those intentional hard choices and becoming accustomed to making more and more of them, because just like BJ Fogg says in Tiny Habits, these tiny habits build upon each other, and you can either build upon strengthening stronger habits or you can build out weaker habits. But I'm going to tell you right now, one leads to a spear of greatness and the other to a valley of despair. And I don't think we realize that it's these micro choices that we get the opportunity to make that we do in the seconds and minutes that make up our days, that then form the hours, the days, the months, the years that culminate into so many of us being that 76% of people who are living in regret at the end of their lives. And so that's what this whole chapter is about. And it's really about how do you dream your dream? Wow. And then I'll go into another one on the behavior shift side. I have one that I call the outward inspirer. And where I got this is one of my favorite bosses was a guy named Jay Skibinski. And Jay was the CIO for one of the first corporate companies that I was in. It was a $14 billion company. And he was just one of the best mentors I ever worked with. And we were working on this initiative that was going to fundamentally change so many aspects of the company. And I remember we would go into these meetings, and I mean, I'm sure the listeners have seen it. You've seen it. Everyone sits in these meetings, doesn't say a word. They all shake their head like they're in agreement. Yeah. And he always had this saying that people talk with their feet. And it's the truth, because what happened, if there were 10 people in that meeting, after we left, 80% through their actions showed a completely different willingness to embrace the changes that we were trying to do than what they represented in that meeting. Yeah. And I'll tell you what ends up happening is just look at the Fortune 500 from 20 years ago. You'll see that over half of them no longer exist. Nice. And it's because so many things happen to us in our careers that are like that. But we do the same thing in our personal life, where we articulate that we're going to make these New Year's resolutions. And then 2 weeks in, when it starts getting tough, we take the easy path. Wow. I mean, I can say it again, but this whole thing is, you need to be an outward inspirer. You need to influence those around you through positive action. You need to influence yourself by remaining true to your core aspirations through positive action. And that's what that chapter is all about. And I highlight Susan Wojcicki, who's the former YouTube CEO, because she's a great example of doing this outward inspire in a corporate environment. Mm-hmm. So those are just two examples.
Well, that is good. Thank you very much for sharing. I know you are big on behavioral change. And I also know that many of my listeners, they are at that point, maybe they are trying to reinvent themselves, whether to be more intentional with their career or their business. So can you share with us some tips that anyone can adopt to in order to reinvent themselves, irrespective of that?
Yeah, I mean, then let me share the significance of this. So I often quote Dan Schwabel, who's a partner and research director at Future Workplace. And he ended up interviewing 1,200 different, what he calls remarkable individuals. These ranged from Fortune 50 CEOs to Hollywood celebrities, authors, professional athletes, politicians, astronauts. And throughout all these conversations, he observed a prevailing characteristic among all of them. And that was the consistent pursuit of reinvention. And I think a great example of this, because it just came out of an interview I did with an author named Dan Fielding, was Dan was Kid Rock's bodyguard for many years. And you look at Kid Rock, and on the surface, does he need any more money? No, not really. Does he need to keep doing what he's doing? No. Could he go out on an island and just live his life like that? Yes. But behind the scenes, he gets up at 4:30 every morning. He, unaware to most of us, invests himself in philanthropic efforts around the world, bettering people, because that's where a huge amount of his passion lies. And he spends a good portion of his day dedicating his time to that. And then he also puts it to his music and other things. But I think so many of us, we reach these points in our life and we wonder why we're stagnant. And it's because we're not constantly looking for opportunities to reinvent ourselves intentionally before we unintentionally become a victim to our own inaction. And I think why this chapter is so important is because we are entering into a time now of profound change where, depending on if you listen to McKinsey or Deloitte or who have you, it's somewhere between 300 to 700 million jobs are going to change over the next decade.
Hi.
And so a core thing that I try to teach here is that we, as human beings, what separates us from all the other species is that we are a body meant to be a continuous learner. We are meant to be able to learn, adapt, and evolve. And when we're not doing that, we're not living out our true potential. So I like to quote my friend Jim Quick here that the only difference between someone who's literate and illiterate is that one of them reads books and the other doesn't. But how many times do you run into people when you ask them, what book are you reading? And they say, I don't read anymore. I mean, that is one of the most surefire ways to meet your demise is if you are not putting in a practice where you're learning every day, because that's how I adjust myself is through all this knowledge I'm gaining. I'm seeing new patterns emerge. I'm seeing shifts that are coming, and it helps you realize what the future is bringing towards you. And that allows you to make tiny shifts of reinvention along the way instead of these major course corrections that so many people find themselves in when their job gets eliminated and they haven't done that betterment work to better position themselves for the future. And so that is why reinvention is so important.
Wow, that is so good. Thank you very much. So there you have it, guys. You need to constantly reinvent yourself. And to do that, you need to be a continuous learner and a voracious learner. So thank you, John. Now let's go into our rapid fire question section. This year, you said you read about 100 books. Which one is your top book that you read in the year 2023?
Oh my God, there's so many. It's hard to pick just one. I really like the Everyday Hero Manifesto by Robin Sharma. I thought if you are looking for a bunch of quick different learnings that you could apply in your life, I thought that was a really good book. Jennifer Brahimi Wallace also did a very strong book this year where she was writing this book to help parents understand how to help their kids confront toxic achievement culture, which I think is something akin to perfectionism that is impacting so many youngsters and I think college students and people in their careers where they think they constantly have to achieve this greatness. And when they don't, it's resulting in all kinds of mental challenges and severe depression, suicide rates, and everything else. So I think for the message that she was trying to deliver, it was a timely book.
Okay. So if you can solve one problem for the entire world, what problem will you solve?
Unmattering. I think too many people wake up every single day and we have an epidemic crisis of mattering that is impacting billions of people globally. And the way that this represents itself is we say we have epidemics of loneliness, of hopelessness, of helplessness, of depression. I think at its core, it all comes back to a feeling that our life doesn't hold significance.
Yeah.
And if I could solve this feeling that people don't matter, I think the world would be a much better place.
Because we all matter. Thank you for saying that. That's very important for people to hear. We all matter. So one final thing, John, where can we get your book? I know it's going to come out next year. Or maybe I should say, how can my audience find you so that it can be in your orbit?
Yes, you're right. It's not ready yet. I've got an advanced reader copy that I'm holding, which is the unreleased version because it's not even coming out in paperback and I'm holding a paperback book right now. But it comes out on February 6th. It's titled Passion Struck, 12 Powerful Principles to Unlock Your Purpose and Ignite Your Most Intentional Life. And that whole ignite part is really that intrinsic motivation that burns inside all of us and unleashing it so that you create this life that you desire to have. As I mentioned, it comes out February 6th. You can buy it really wherever you purchase books, whether that's Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, bookshop.org, if you want to support local bookshops, which I love. But the most important thing is once you purchase it, if you come back to my website, passionstruck.com/passionstruckbook, and you pre-order it before February 6th, I have curated a ton of valuable gifts for you. I say that it's $300 worth. It has cost me a lot more than $300 to create these things. So one of them is a whole masterclass that I've done on 5 different ways that you can go out and find your purpose. Another one is an ebook where in the book itself, I talk about the deliberate action process that I've used for over 2 decades that has allowed me to 10X every job I was ever in, allowed me to become a CIO when I was 39, a CEO of a software company by the time I was 42, a serial entrepreneur, et cetera. I just talk about it high level in the book. If you purchase the book now, you get access to the 60-page ebook that takes you through step-by-step how you implement this in your life. Plus, I have a similar one on how you utilize intrinsic motivation to become a better leader and different things like that. Plus, you get access to the first chapter of the book.
Thank you very much, John. We appreciate you joining us today. And there you have it, guys. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Bola. It was my honor to come here and serve your audience.
Thank you.